Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're pleased to welcome NFL insider Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange and also the new AAF and their official website. And Howard, let's start with the Kareem Hunt investigation. What type of discipline or delay are you expecting from the league at whatever point we hear from Roger Goodell?
Yeah, it's hard to say when the league will rule because we've seen in the past sometimes how long it takes. The whole Ezekiel Elliott situation took almost, more than a year before they finally announced their suspension. I would suspect that this one might not last as long, and I would think at least by maybe the start of training camp, they're going to know exactly how long the suspension is. And everyone's speculating. I actually heard some speculation it might be the whole season. I can't imagine that would be the case. You know, I would, but a lot depends on what the league finds out specifically. That really most of us don't know yet. We don't know a lot of the details. There's been rumors out there and speculation about different things. But you know, the league's going to get to the bottom of it. You know, you would think it would be in that 6-game range because that's normally what domestic violence issues have been. But then again, there sometimes can be differences depending on what the league finds. So I think that it's probably best for everyone just to sit back and wait and see what the league does because they do it on their own timetable.
Certainly going to be one of the major stories of the next few months till we hear from the NFL. A lot of times that seems to happen in the dead of summer. So July is when we often get the NFL ruling on these types of situations. Howard, what are some of the other major storylines of the NFL offseason that you're anticipating?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, we're getting to the point where the combine's coming up, the start of the league year in March, and then another whole round of free agency. But, you know, aside from all that, which is the normal course of things in the league, I'm very interested when we get to the league meeting at the end of March to see if the league will do anything about the uproar over what happened in the Saints-Rams game. Will there be a real move to come up with some way of looking at plays? And I'm really curious how closely the NFL is going to be watching the Alliance, which has this, you know, the sky judge replay official that has the ability to immediately pick up a flag or drop a flag if there's a non-call, if they see something that's obvious in real time, not in a replay situation, but that they see something immediately like could have with the Rams and the Saints game. And so they're doing it in the Alliance. It's very important to know that Mike Pereira, who, of course, is the former NFL supervisor of officials, is now working with the Alliance, and he is one that is for that type of thing in the NFL. And so I think it's significant that they've done it in the Alliance. And I think if we see that it can work, then I think it might be something the NFL will consider. Now, maybe they won't consider it this year. You know, maybe they'll try it in the preseason, but I think we could be moving towards that. I don't disagree with the commissioner, Roger Goodell, who says he's not for expanding replay for those type of plays. But the sky judge is not technically an expansion of replay. And I think if you can find a way to do it quick and painlessly and just get the decision, you know, quickly, then I think that would be a good thing for the NFL. And so that's one thing I think is going to be very intriguing to see how much discussion there is of this, what the competition committee comes up with, and to see if potentially there is some kind of change made.
Howard Balzer with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio from the Sports Exchange and also writing for the brand new AAF website. So the Alliance of American Football, as you talk about. Do we know if that rule was already in place, the sky judge rule was already there before the NFC Championship, Howard?
I don't think they had planned on that because it's interesting because I was in San Antonio for a couple of weeks of the Alliance training camp, and I had a chance to talk to Mike Pereira at the preseason games that the Alliance had on the Sunday and Monday, January 27th, 28th, I think it was. And it was then that he was saying that I'd like to see that type of rule in the NFL, and he said, I'm suggesting it for the Alliance. Now, you know, maybe they had decided, and they hadn't decided to announce it yet, but he was saying he was pushing for that in the Alliance, and then, of course, within a week or so, it came out that they were indeed doing it. So I would think that what happened there probably spurred the Alliance to do that. And so I think it's a pretty good move because, you know, what the Alliance is doing in a lot of ways is, in a sense, a training ground for a lot of things for the NFL, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, whether it's officials, and potential rules. I mean, who knows? The NFL could be looking at this whole not having kickoffs and seeing how they feel it adds to the pace of the game and all that. And it certainly seems that we're appearing that the NFL could be getting closer to doing something like that. And if what they see in the Alliance is something that they feel, hey, this is kind of helping their game, that could potentially push the NFL to come up with something like that. Again, I don't know how fast those things will happen, but I definitely think the NFL is watching many, many things that the Alliance is doing very closely.
How would you evaluate debut weekend, the big launch of the AAF?
I think, you know, someone asked me how I would rate it on a number, you know, on a rating scale. And I think overall I would give it, you know, a 7 or an 8. I think the production value, the tempo of the game was strong. I think that certainly there were some issues with offenses and offensive lines, which shouldn't be surprising when you consider that the NFL has a lot of problems with offensive lines with certain teams, and they have OTAs and long training camps and all those things. And the Alliance didn't have that. And I think the one thing that's been lost a little bit, Amy, in the Alliance, where everyone says, well, they only had a month of training camp. Well, the other thing is most of these guys that are in this league haven't played football in a long time. You know, some of them it's been a year, some of it's been even longer. And to put guys together and form a team doesn't happen overnight. And so I think when we consider all that, I thought the product was pretty solid. And so the TV ratings, you know, were pretty good. The question is, can they sustain it? Can they maintain it? But I think overall, when people watch it, they said, hey, this looks to be pretty competitive football. And if they can develop some of these, you know, new players that are worth watching, then they have a chance to be around for a while. So I think it was a pretty strong debut, and now they have to grow and get better from this week after week.
Howard Balzer of the Sports Exchange and the official Alliance of American Football website with us after hours on CBS Sports Radio. I think one of the things that I appreciated is that it's a creation of minds who brought their wisdom and their experience from the NFL, like Bill Polian, and of course many coaches, and as you talk about Mike Pereira, they're able to use their experience to craft a product based on that. Now, here's a big question that I have. When it comes to then the relaunch of the XFL next year, can the market sustain multiple developmental leagues, side football leagues, when you've only got so many players who can play at this level?
That's a very good question, and I think time is going to tell on that. You know, the XFL has also made these, you know, comments that, well, we don't see ourselves as a developmental league. Well, I think the reality is they're not going to have – it's not like they're going to steal guys away from the NFL. So they're still going to have – they're still going to be picking from essentially that same group of players. But I think what we've seen – and the one thing I've always said, Amy, is this. When you look at the NFL and you look at the last 10 – let's say the last 10 guys on every NFL roster plus another 10 guys on the practice squad, that's a lot of players. And there's not that much difference between the last 10 guys that make an NFL roster and the practice squad and the next 10 or 20 guys that don't make it. There's not that much of a difference. And so if you can get them all together and play, you know, play as a team and organize it, then the key is you can have competitive football. And so that's what's going to be intriguing to see, like you said, if both leagues can be successful. You know, what's interesting is that the XFL is going to have seven cities that have NFL teams, including New York, including Los Angeles,
right,
including Washington, D.C. I mean, I made the observation that, hey, in Los Angeles, there's a lot of people that don't care about the Rams that much, much less the Chargers. Are they going to want to watch the XFL? That remains to be seen. We'll start finding that out about a year from now. But the one thing that I noticed in these training camps, and let's remember, you know, there were 23 guys cut from every Alliance team. Now, that's not a huge number. That's about, 160 players or so. But that, you know, that just shows that, you know, there's a bunch of guys that want to play this sport and would love to continue their career, whether it's for the Alliance or getting another shot to perhaps get to the NFL. So I think you can always find players. But I think you raised the most important point, is when you get the good coaching that these players are getting, then that's what's going to be important. It's going to, A, prepare them if they get another NFL shot, but it's also going to make them better for the teams that they're on. But let's be realistic. The Alliance talks a lot about being developmental, but right now there's 416 players on all the Alliance rosters put together. They're all not going to the NFL in August for training camp. There's only going to be a relatively small percentage of them. And a lot of them go to the NFL, aren't going to make it, and they'll be back with the Alliance next year. So they're also positioning themselves, they hope, to be a league that sustains itself and can be competitive in the cities where they're playing for all those guys that aren't going to get that shot. But it's still an opportunity for them to continue playing the game that they all love until they can't play anymore.
It seems like a nice mesh, at least at this point, of entertainment, of course, because you have to have an audience that cares, but also of business. The business model is very sound. But then as you talk about the developmental part and potentially giving players a launching pad to either continue or to start an NFL career, if that's possible. So it's kind of an interesting mix. And then the timing of it seemed perfect as well, coming the week after the Super Bowl, when, at least at this point, there's not a ton of competition in sports.
No, you're exactly right. And I think that, you know, the one aspect of that I noted about the tempo of the game, you know, even when, you know, in some of the games there weren't a whole lot of points scored, but it moved along. There was a tempo to it. You know, all the games, all four games of this opening weekend were right around 2.5 hours. The longest game was the Arizona game on Sunday evening, which lasted 2 hours and 40 minutes. And so when you can do that and you're moving it along, and the production quality of the games for those watching on TV, I thought was pretty darn good. And so all of those things are, you know, I think are trending up. And so, you know, it's a short season. It's only 10 games. 10 regular season games. And so I think it just whets the appetite for a lot of people who just love to watch football. I do wonder, to be honest, in some situations when you start in February, is there going to be some, because there certainly can be some weather issues, you know, in some places. And that could certainly be the case in the XFL next year and in places like New York and Washington and you know, in other cities. But like you said, though, coming right on the heels of the Super Bowl being over, and now usually people start getting into that whole mode of, uh-oh, there's not football for a long time. Well, now you've got the next, you know, 3 months or so to be watching football again. And the leagues don't need, obviously they're not going to get the TV audience that the NFL has, but all you need is a solid percentage of it to be successful. And so, once again, it comes down to sustaining those opening audiences, keeping the fans interested and engaged. Mm. And so, I, like I said, I think it's off to a good start. And both leagues appear to be well-funded, which, of course, is a big key, because you're not going to make a lot of money, or you're probably going to lose a lot of money coming out of the box. But as long as those people they're investing in it or hanging with it, then I think you've got, you know, a pretty good chance for success on that level.
You can find Howard on Twitter at HBalzer721, and you can read him on the official AAF website, the Alliance of American Football, off and running. Howard, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
My pleasure, Amy. Anytime. Take care.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I think we're all appalled by it. It is an egregious act. We all understand that. At the end of the day, in terms of doing our research, we came away that the act was egregious. He is extremely remorseful for that moving forward. And I've always believed that it is important moving forward to, if a person wants to better themselves moving forward and be a better person, I'm willing to give them a chance in terms of doing all the deep research I've done. I still believe that he will be a better man today than he was yesterday.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
General Manager John Dorsey makes the move and jumps the line, so to speak. And if you think about it, he probably expected that there would be multiple offers for Kareem Hunt. Because he is a very talented running back, he had 14 touchdowns at the point at which he was cut by the Chiefs because the video came out and he got caught lying. He had almost 1,000 rushing yards after 11 games. And so you would certainly expect that there will be teams out there that would be willing to offer him a low-risk contract for a year and absorb whatever suspension the NFL hands down. Can I tell you the truth? I'm not confident that the NFL doesn't blow this. I feel like it's cut and dried. However, I know better than to assume the NFL will do anything that seems like it makes sense and is logical. So we'll wait to hear from the NFL. The investigation was supposed to be done by March so that teams could have the information before free agency began, but it's a moot point now that Kareem has already signed a contract. We'll see if they have that investigation done by the spring. Keep in mind, this is the second investigation into Kareem Hunt because the incident in the hotel hallway in Cleveland actually happened a year ago this month. So it happened in February of 2018, but the video wasn't released until November, which then cited the outrage and then obviously exposed Hunt for having lied to the Chiefs. He told them he never left his room that night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Josue is listening in Texas. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Amy, how's it going?
It's good, thank you.
I just wanted to throw my opinion out there about Kareem Hunt, that I think the league and Roger Goodell and the group of people that sit around on the table, that I think they should make an example out of Kareem Hunt like they did Ray Rice to show the new upcoming prospects coming from college that this is a serious situation, and that, you know, because there's always going to be clubbing, alcohol, females, and to show them a clear example that they will not tolerate, you know, domestic violence. And because a lot of these players, they've been playing football all their lives, you know, and that's the goal, is to make it to the NFL. And that's just something that they'll keep in mind whenever they do decide to go club. It's like, oh man, I know, I gotta have self-control and know how to act, because, you know, responsibilities come with that big contract. Mm-hmm. Because you are, you know, a lot of times when you're seen out getting ice cream or out in the club, you know, they say, hey, there's a Kansas City running back or there's a Baltimore Ravens running back. So you are representing the NFL.
You definitely are, and to whom much is given, much is required. So I do believe that the high profile, I don't care so much about the money. That's more about the market. The NFL makes $15 billion a year. I'd rather the players have it. But in terms of the profile and the attention, I do believe there should be a greater responsibility. Now, the NFL has dropped the ball so many times in the past that I really don't have a whole lot of faith. Maybe this is the situation where they come out and they take a stance. And I do hope that Kareem Hunt is smart enough not to appeal the suspension, and that he takes whatever gets handed down to him because he wants to show how remorseful he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I have another opinion about, I really don't think that Kareem Hunt is all that sorry. I think he's sorry that there was a camera in the hallway, and he's more sorry that he got caught than the actual conflict that he had.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I mean, the actions speak louder than words. The fact is that He didn't say a word about it to the Chiefs until the video surfaced. And let's be honest, if the video hadn't come out, he was way past the point at which he was going to show up in his boss's office and say, by the way, there's something that happened 9-10 months ago that you should know about. I mean, the investigation from the NFL had already concluded. And so he had lied to the Chiefs, who had then, they had then told the NFL what he told them. And so those lies were handed down. I mean, there are a lot of ways that you could look at this. Did the NFL drop the ball by not paying for the video the way that TMZ did? Now, the league has said we're never going to pay for video like that, that they did try to see the video and didn't. I mean, I still have friends and family who are skeptical of that even. They don't believe that the Chiefs and the NFL never saw the video. But I would agree with you. If the video never comes out, TMZ did the Chiefs a favor, did the NFL a favor. If the video never comes out, he's still playing for Kansas City, and we're not having this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with the guy from Georgia, the one with the four daughters, that his second chance should be, you know, life, you know, because what does the NFL stand for? Not for long. So if there is any player that deserves a second chance, I think it's Kaepernick.
Well, yeah, I mean, it certainly is a conversation that people have. At the same time, these are also businesses that can decide what they want and what they don't want. And I think we've seen a pretty clear pattern in the NFL that teams are more willing to take on former criminals, or in this case, someone who's been accused, and actually we've seen him commit violence against another person, than they are willing to take on the controversy of someone who's taken a political stance. Now, there are other reasons why teams would tell you that they don't want to sign Colin Kaepernick. And it's not quite as cut and dried as he won't stand for the anthem. But I do agree that there's a weird disparity there. Josue, thank you so much for the phone call. I appreciate you listening in Texas. 855-212-4227. And on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. I appreciate all of your comments. They're not all accurate, though. For instance, Tom says, who cares? Win games and everyone will forget. The NFL is loaded with criminals and women abusers. Why is this surprising? Tom, that's not true. Loaded is not true. The vast majority of NFL players, the vast majority of professional athletes have never been accused of violence against women or committing other crimes. The issue is that we hear about the ones who have been accused of crimes or violence against women because that's the scintillating, that's the sexy, that's the juicy, that's the controversial. That's the NFL. You don't hear about the 95% of these men who take care of their business and handle themselves like professionals and don't get into trouble with the law. You hear about the scandalous. And so and then Tom responded that it has to be 20%. No, I don't know the statistics, but I can find them out. I'll bet you it's not even 10% of athletes in the NFL who've been accused of crimes or who've been accused of violence against women. Roland says on Facebook, the Browns have Chubbs. They have Duke Johnson, so I don't really think they needed another running back. He's from Ohio, attended college in Ohio. Yes, that's true. He went to the University of Toledo. Clearly, someone has asked for a favor and given him another opportunity. Not only did he commit an assault on a man and a woman in separate situations, he lied to the franchise and wasn't honest when he was asked about the situation. That's a character issue as well. Jason says, I live in Cleveland. I hope they trade him for a nice receiver. Byron Henry says, bargain back with a high-yield Browns who win the division. I think he's over his female problems. That's just a case of being uninformed, because it's not a female problem. It's an alcohol and anger problem. He's been accused of getting into an altercation with a man as well at a bar. So this is not a female problem. And whatever you think of the female, it doesn't matter. He's still responsible for his actions, period. As adults, we are all responsible for our own choices and our own actions.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Jerome dribbling in his hands around midcourt, defended by White. Now we'll go to work with 11 seconds. He finds Kyle Guy alone from three, and he buries it from the deep corner right. It's a 5-point lead with 1:52 to go. Ty Jerome into the front court, telling his teammates to settle down. He moves it across the timeline, defended by Kobe White. Passes it to Guy. Now he gets it back immediately. Shot clock at 10. Jerome to the top of the arc, feeds it to Guy. Guy wants another. He's fouled, and he hits the three-pointer anyway. Oh, baby. Kyle Guy with a chance at a four-point play.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
What a 48 hours it was for the University of Virginia men's basketball team. We talked about their loss to Duke over the weekend in Charlottesville. So Duke shot the lights out from downtown. And then the Hoos, H-O-O-S as they're called, that's their nickname. I only know this because my niece goes to school there. The Hoos then turned around and went to Chapel Hill to take on UNC. And as you hear with Dave Kane on the Cavaliers Radio Network, they end up getting a couple of huge triples and some big shots down the stretch by Kyle Guy, and they win on the road at UNC. So the topsy-turvy world of ACC men's basketball. It's one of the most competitive conferences in the country, and UVA with that stellar defense very often has to hold opponents to 50 points or so, but they can also shoot from beyond the arc when they get hot. And so they were able to win against UNC, and we'll see if they maintain their position there in the top five in the latest rankings. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We'll sprinkle in some NBA as we head through these next hour and 15 minutes here on the show. It's our Twizzler Tuesday question, though, from the world of football, asking you, what's your reaction to Kareem Hunt getting a one-year deal with the Cleveland Browns? Now, just to clarify, because not everyone is clear on how this works, he's not yet eligible to play. He's still on the commissioner's exempt list, which means he cannot participate in any football activities of any kind right now. General manager John Dorsey is hoping that the NFL will wrap up its investigation, remove Hunt from the commissioner's exempt list, and likely hand down its suspension, but would allow him then to resume football activities through OTAs, through the spring and the summer, training camp. Typically, that's what the league does. They allow you to participate until it gets to game week. And then your suspension starts and you are banned from any contact or practice or football activities until your suspension is over. They could hand down different stipulations in this case, but generally that's the plan. And so what John Dorsey is hoping is that the NFL will finish its investigation, take him off the commissioner's exempt list, and allow him to practice through the spring and the summer. But we'll have to wait and see. I don't have a whole lot of faith in the NFL that they take the logical path. Doesn't seem like it's been smooth or easy, even after they instituted their new domestic violence policy. And honestly, I'm not even sure this falls under domestic violence. There's a larger behavioral policy umbrella with the NFL, but the 6-game suspension is supposed to be a baseline for domestic violence. Violence against women and children has certainly fallen under that umbrella, so we'll see how the NFL applies. As for John Dorsey, he's the same guy that drafted Kareem Hunt in Kansas City, and he believes that Hunt is already on the road to making amends.
I know that he has actually sought professional counseling here on a week-in and week-out basis. Part of the plans that will be in place here is being able to outreach to the community on a weekly basis for he. To me, words don't earn trust. Actions earn trust. Okay, so the actions that have begin to be developed and he has shown have led us to believe that, you know, he is willing, he's going to move forward here on this.
So John Dorsey has been working on this plan. They believe that Kareem Hunt will comply, but all of that is irrelevant until the NFL weighs in, because for now he's still on the commissioner's exempt list. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Getting your reaction on Twitter, A-Law Radio, as well as on our Facebook page. Pete says on Twitter, I'm not crazy about the Hunt signing at all. As a Bengals fan, I wasn't crazy about Cincy drafting Joe Mixon either. He seemed to turn things around, though, so I'm a bit on the fence. I'm still confused on the signing, though. Cleveland doesn't really need him, in my opinion. Just to refresh your memory, Joe Mixon is the former Oklahoma running back who was caught on tape late night near campus getting into an argument with a fellow student, a young woman, and then punching her. And she obviously had a bloody face, and the video was public, and OU kept him on scholarship but suspended him for a year. And then by the time he got to the NFL, he had gone through all kinds of interviews and pre-draft workouts and conversations with teams. And Cincinnati, who has had a track record of bringing in guys with troubled past, decided to give him that opportunity and agreed. He has towed the line since he's been in the league, as has Tyreek Hill, who was on that same Chiefs roster with Kareem Hunt and got drafted by John Dorsey as well. Again, 855-212-4227. Let's talk to Oscar, who's in Miami. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I like your position. Like you said, that there has to be some consequence for what these players do. And bottom line, they have a code of conduct they have to hold up to. And unfortunately, I'm totally on your side in the sense that I think the NFL is going to drop this one again because they set a precedent for it in the past. I mean,
I'm hoping, though, Oscar. This one seems pretty cut and dried.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.